Nice lunch here, or go back and get seconds or thirds. At any rate, we're going to go ahead and resume our program, and I will momentarily turn things over to Steve Crocker. But our next panel is the discussion on update on activities around the world. So perhaps I'll go ahead and turn things over to Steve.
Welcome, everybody, to the last panel. This is our update on activities around the world with an attempt to shine as bright a light as we can on the region that we're in, which is a quite exciting region. Let's see. So is Lehan? Can't make it. Okay. Crit, and I apologize, but it will be challenging for me to say your name. Please help us practice your name and then plunge right in.
Good afternoon. I'm Crit from the TH and
Cheats.
Today, I'm going to talk about the DNSSEC update from .th. .th, we delegated since 1988, and we have more than 20 years of experience. We are a non-profit organization, and we are very strict on the delegation. So we are a very small registry. We have less than 100K domain register, and .th is for Thai people only, and some for foreigner that have company located in Thai. .th, we start signing our zone since 2009. Because number of spam and threat are rising, and we want to be initiative in secure our domain and help people to get started with DNSSEC. Next slide, please. At the beginning, we start only two of our zones at the top level, .th, and the second level, .in.th, on March 30, 2009, and we begin signing the biggest zone, .co.th, on June 19, 2009. And we did the KSK rollover two times. The first one last year, and the second one is May 30 this year. Because we are one of the early adopters in the DNSSEC, We began the project since 2008. At that time, we decided to adopt the NSEC to be used to, because our zone is very small at that time. The biggest zone is less than 20K. And as we tested, our zone is become bigger about four times, which is about roughly 10 megabyte inside. And the size time is about 15 seconds. And our zone is signed from the unsigned file, unsigned zone. And we change the RR6 every time we sign at the beginning. That is not a good idea for the zone transfer to the secondary or slave server. Lesson learned, after the root is signed, it's much easier to maintain the trust anchor, and we don't have to register our DNS key to the third party or to the something like ISC, DLV. And for the zone transfer, NSEC 3 with the opt-out bit set is better choice for the time being right now, because very few people signing that zone. So there's a lot of NSEC in our zone. And because we are signing using the NSEC, meaning that we are signing every single record in our zone, so it takes really long time to sign our zone. As we tested on using the NSEC 3, the time used to sign our zone is greatly reduced from about 15 seconds to less than 1 second to sign our zone. So the next move is we will adopt the NSEC 3 with opt-out bit set, so we only have NSEC 3 for the record that signed. And that's all for my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions? You want to save the questions till the end?
Whichever. We can do either.
Okay. I'm going to try to remember the question that I had.
Oh, no.
No, that's fine. We'll move on. Okay. So, Yong from Malaysia.
Right. Thank you. I'm Yong Yao Ying. Everybody knows me as Yong. Okay, I'll share a little bit about our .my experience in terms of how we sign our zones and as well as what's after that. So the next slide will be what I'll be sharing about. is an overview of our deployment in Malaysia, some of the issues we have after we have deployed, and I'm also sharing some of the findings that we have after we did the public trial, which I think are still relevant. After that will be some of the effort that we are making in promoting the NSX in Malaysia, as well as the challenges that we see ahead. Next slide, please. Okay, overview. Next slide. Okay, this is milestones that we have actually put in place as our deployment strategy. We had our closed test bed in between March and October 2009. That was just signing our .my and .net .my. No, these are on a test bed kind of thing, so it's not actual production. And we used the IANA, the NSX root test bed then. We move on to the public trial, which was 29 December 2009 to May 2010. At that time, we actually signed all our zones and to see how things are. So it's a replica of the production system altogether in terms of the interface and how the zones are being handled. So the NSX root test bed was good for us to use, for us to complete the whole chain of trust. And finally, in production, we would sign it on the 9th of October, and the DS record was added on in December. 2 weeks after we signed the zones, we actually also, we roll out our change of our interface as well to be able to accept DS record from our customers. By the way, .my, the registry, we are currently running it as both the registry and the registrar. So we can make our web application to allow our customers to submit in their DS record. Yep. So next slide. Yep. So this is essentially what we have deployed. We use RSA SHA-256 with NSAT-3 with opt-up. And our KSK is a year with 2048, and ZSK is 12 weeks rollover with 1024. Next slide. Okay, so the take-up of DNSSEC is low, as expected, and the graph that you see is as of 24th of May. There was just about 7 domain names between March and April. I started collecting the data in March and April. There was only about 7 domain names, and these are domain names that either we do it ourselves or people that is familiar with the NSX that we know. Interestingly, in May, the one extra DNSSEC signed domain was done by an individual that when I went to his website, he said that he did it because he could. So I was pretty glad that was done, right? So next slide, please. Okay, post-deployment issues. These are some of the things that I would want to share of issues that I've discovered. Maybe you can move next slide. Yeah. So, and I really am very appreciative of the community, because I must confess that we do not have a very good monitoring system of how things, when things go wrong, or if things go wrong. But we have been informed of this issue. So the first issue was that, the first issue, I've not yet find out the solution for it or what is best to do about it. But what happened is that we've been told that the validating resolver could not actually get the DS record response or an NSAT-3 response when they request for a DS record to validate. Okay, so what happened is that since I'm using NSAT-3 with opt-out, so the zone is actually only those that has a child DS record is being signed. So a lot of our second level domain names are not signed. So for example, a gov.my, we did not actually make any effort to approach the government. The government not signing any of the zone yet. So for this particular 2LD, the whole zone file is almost like a plain zone file, except that we have our own signatures, and as well as one R ancestry resource record, so I thought that looked pretty normal. But when the validating server tried to validate, it requests for the A record, and it got the answer. It requests for the DS record to validate, but the answer that was returned was NX domain. So the expected was ancestry just to prove that it wasn't signed, but the return was NX domain, and it's considered they couldn't determine whether is it really signed or not. So it went become bogus. So when I was told that this was the issue, tried to look for a solution, still yet to be able to find a solution in terms of how the answer can be returned. So what I did was that for all the zones that we do not have a child record, we decided to take away the signature from .my itself so that the validating issue would not be there. Right. So that's what I did. Back to the second point is that, of course, this is a simpler issue where the timing of the rollover was wrongly set. I'm actually using the ZKT signing tool. So it's all in the configuration. So what happened was that I actually missed a particular configuration for the rollover of the ZSK. And I was told also by the community that the key was removed before it's even time for the replacement. So that when I was told, I looked at my configuration, I found out that I forgot to change it from the default configuration. So that was the issue that I found. So I hope that this is not another recurring issue. Next slide. Okay, so some of the relevant findings we have from the public trial, next slide, would be that the general public acceptance is quite low. I think it's because of the lack of awareness and as well as the education of the DNS technology. A lot of domain owners actually don't control their own zone. I mean, these are handled by hosting providers. And a lot of people still think that it's not urgent, so they are very reluctant to do so. ISPs as well, during our public trial, there were a few of them that joined us. But after we went to production, we didn't quite able to engage them yet, but I think we would probably need to persuade them. But on the other hand, as of the issue that I've actually shared just now, it is a blessing in disguise in a sense, because none of the recursive server are doing the validating. So when the issue cropped out, it was quite transparent to general users because they didn't know. This has just got to do with the validating. So when we found out, I mean, of course, we tried to fix it, but the general public in Malaysia themselves, they did not see the problem. So of course, as much as we want ISPs to do the validating, it is also a good time for us to be able to iron out any issues that we can see. We also approach the central bank to tell them that this is a technology that is available so that, added security. The central bank was very supportive of the idea. They even hooked us up with some of the banks to share the technology with them. But it is their sense to say that it is really, in the end of the day, up to the bank to adopt the technology if they want to. So, yeah. So this, as much as we can, is just sharing the technology with them. And for us to see in the public trial, those who are really able to do something about the NSI, they seem to be able to do it without much problem. So I guess those people who are able to really handle their own Zoom file and be able to read out on the NSI, it's not so much an issue. Yeah. Next slide, please. Okay, some of our efforts in promoting the NSI. Next slide. Okay, we have been doing annual .my training kind of thing, which is DNS training, since 2006 and 2008. 2009, we did the same, as well as we did awareness training around in five states in Malaysia. And in 2010, where we really prepared to roll out DNS site, we met with some of the resellers. We meet the ISPs to tell them about the NSI, as well as encouraging them to participate in our public trial. We did some DNSSEC workshop even during APTLD. I think that is during APRICOT. And we met with banks, as I've said just now. And this year, we are also doing still in the form of training and workshops. We had our DNSSEC security talk organized by our regulator, MCMC. We had the ISOC Malaysian chapter did an awareness series as well on DNSSEC. And we are going to have another DNS training next week too. Yeah. So these are some of the efforts that we hope to be able to educate the public in general and as well as DNS administrator specifically. Next slide, please. Okay. So what we can see, challenges that are ahead is that we probably need to start to talk in earnest with our ISPs to get them to enable the NSI. our effort in encouraging authoritative DNS administrator to adopt the NSI would still need to be continued. So I guess we need to monitor our signing more and our whole DNS set up more. We probably need to look deeper into this, how we can do this. And there's a lot of improvement in our environment. The more I look into how DNS works, the more I think the initial design is not very nicely done. So there's a lot more room for improvement in there. Yeah, so that's about all that I have. Thank you.
Very nice, very nice. Fujiwara-san.
Good afternoon. I'm Kazunori Fujiwara from JPRS. I will talk about number of DNS validators seen at JP. The presentation is similar at this March at DNS Oak meeting and IEPG meeting, but I updated data. Next. This is today's content. Basic idea, how to detect DNS validators, JPS data, result, conclusion. Basic idea, how to detect validators. JPDS RR has been introduced in root zone. JPDNS key TTL is one day. Thus, DNSSEC validators send JPDNS key query once a day if the validators try to perform JP domain name validation every day. I made assumptions. Validators are IP addresses which send JPDNS key queries. Resolvers are IP addresses which send JP zone queries. Query ratio from DNSSEC validators equal number of queries from validators divided by number of queries from all resolvers. JPS dataset. Overview of JP. JP has 1.2 million registered domain names. JP DNS servers serve 1.6 billion queries per day. JPS is collecting packet captures and query logs. There are 7 DNS subnames, a2g.dnsjp, and operated by multiple operators. And there are 7 IP version 4 addresses, 6 IP version 6 addresses, totally 13 IP addresses. JPS dataset. JPS sometimes collects 2-day long full capture of DNS packets. Once a year, 50 hours, same timing as DITL at DNSOAK. When JP was signed, December 10 last year, when JPDS RR was introduced in root zone, December 10 last year, before 6 hours and after 48 hours, and JPS has been collecting DNS query log from 2 of 7 JPDNS servers for 7 years, not all JPDNS servers. If number of DNS validators is calculated with the query logs, it outputs continuous information. Counting method. from full packet capture, I excluded obviously different queries, and I counted number of IP addresses within each 24 hours. From query log, I excluded obviously different queries, and I treated an IP address as a validator if it sent JPDNSK queries in the past 7 days. The data is used to extrapolate the result from packet capture. Result of full packet capture. The data is separated as 3 time slots when JPDS introduced in root. 6 hours before JPDS introduction, first 20 hours after JPDS introduction, second 24 hours. 4 months later, 2 days, first 24 hours, second 24 hours. Before JPDS in root, there were 280 IP addresses which send JPDNSK queries. They must be DNSSEC monitors. Immediately after JPDS introduction, 2,400 IP addresses send JPDNSK query. And they may be, and next day, 2,200 IP addresses. 4 months later, 3,980 and 3,800 IP addresses found. Number of resolvers are 1.46 million or 1.1 million or 1.5 million each day. Not so changing. Ratio of number of validators are 0.16 and 0.2 in December and 0.25 in April. Validators' share of queries are about 5% each day. Next slide, please. This chart shows number of DNSSEC validators. Dotted line shows an adjusted graph from 2 of 7 DNS servers query log. The dotted line delays 1 week. At December 17, the dotted line value is similar with data from packet capture. At April 12, the dotted line value is similar with data from packet capture. The graph shows interesting phenomena. About 900 IP addresses started sending JPDNSK queries immediately after JP was signed. They may be DNSSEC monitors. Immediately after JPDS introduction, the number is 2,400. Increment is 1,500. There may be 1,500 DNSSEC validators December last year. And the number of DNSSEC validators are increasing. May 10, 4,500 IP addresses sent JPDNSSEC queries. There may be 3,600 DNSSEC validators. Next slide, please. The chart shows validators' share of JP queries. Dotted line shows an adjusted value from 2 of 7 DNS servers query log. Compared with data from packet capture, the adjustment is not good for the analysis. The graph and data from packet capture shows that 5% or 10% of queries came from DNSSEC validators. Next slide, please. Results from analysis. We observed hundreds of IP addresses started sending periodic JPDNSK queries immediately after JP was signed. It is very interesting. 3,600 DNSSEC validators in this May. Number of validators are still increasing. Validators send 5% or 10% of DNSSEC queries. The result may be larger than the number of real DNSSEC validators. If some users of a large-scale organization send JPDNSK queries to their resolvers, the resolver sends JPDNSK query to JPDNS, and the resolver is treated as DNSSEC validator. It cannot be distinguished from real DNSSEC validator. Conclusion. Anyone can count number of DNSSEC validators. If your zone is signed and you capture your DNS server's query. That's all.
It's great. Those are really some very interesting statistics. We'll, I'm sure we'll want to ask some questions, but we'll move on. Jörg?
Yeah. Okay, so it's a pleasure to give you an update of the launch of the DNSSEC for DE. To those of you who do not know me, my name is Jörg Schweiger. I'm the CTO with DNIC. Next slide, please. Well, we kind of introduced DNSSEC in two stages. First, we implemented a testbed that started out almost a year ago. And secondly, we went live, it is like 20 days ago, so that was basically on 31st of May. Referring to the testbed, what we did over there is we provided our testers with a dedicated infrastructure. We wanted to test whether DNSSEC would be really operable, technical operable, according to our standards and to our parameters. Of course, you might know that DE is probably not the smallest zone. And B, we wanted to make sure that there is acceptance. Acceptance meaning registrar acceptance and market demand, which, by the way, I do have to admit, still is not the way that we wanted it to be. Almost a year of running the testbed, we kind of seamlessly or smooth moved into production. That is, we took the DS records from the testbed and transplanted them to the going live, which we did quite the same way as everybody else seems to have done that. So we rolled out to our 16 locations spread all over the world, deliberately unavailable, hard word, validatable. I should learn it with DNSSEC. zoned to our different locations, and then we unblinded the keys, as I said, on May 31st. And finally, zone data got validatable by introducing a DS record on May 7th into the root. Well, that could be it from this update because reading out the line that is given at the very bottom of the slide, you see no unusual traffic, no unexpected traffic patterns, nor any unexpected volumes, so we seem to be fine. Next slide, please. Well, really anything unfamiliar? Probably not. So if you take a look at the chart that is depicted over here, you see DNSSEC-related queries. And that is a chart from May 31st where we unblinded the key. What you see over here is that there's an instant spike at about 12:15. So as I told you before that the DS record wasn't in the zone in the root yet, interesting feature, isn't it? So any ideas what happened? Well, there were first tweets at 12 o'clock that we're going to unblind the keys in the DE zone. So everybody seems to be trying out what is really going on with .te. So even over here, it seems to be a Twitter omnipresence. Next slide, please. As you can see on that slide, things turn out to be quite normal. So this is a chart from June 7th where the DS work actually appeared in the root zone, and that was around 1,600 hours, and that is where the queries to the DS record rose. May I draw your attention, by the way, to the number of queries? And that is quite disappointing, I do have to admit, because these are, on average, let's say 150,000 queries a second, where we usually experience non-DNSSEC-related queries about three magnitudes more. So basically, we kind of answer 120 or 150,000 queries a second. Next slide, please. Yeah, that's the marketing slide, folks. So, heads up. We are the TLD that has the most signed domains. How come? okay, disclaimer, as to my knowledge. So what happens, it's quite easy to explain. We're using a feature that's called NS Entries. So we're not delegating domains, but domain data is authoritative within our zone. So these zones get signed right away with .de. So basically, there's nothing to do for operators, holders, registrars, or whatsoever. So that's how come. To give you a more, let's say, fair comparison, let's move to the next slide. So this is depicting the number of signed secondary level domains. Well, they kind of correspond what we saw around the world with different numbers of registered or secured domains. So we're currently having about 800 secured second level domains, and some of them even stemming from the testbed. That, by the way, is with about 20 registrars out of 270, and it's just four of them being responsible for more than one or two test DNSSEC domain. So we still do have to work on an uptake of DNSSEC. Next slide, please. Yeah, now onwards to some technical parameters and details. What we're doing concerning DS record, we're going to take whatever the client has, meaning we would prefer getting a key instead of a hash so that we can apply hashing algorithms we do want to apply. Let's say in return, we offer our customers syntax checks, validation checks, so nothing really specific. Next slide. More of technical details and parameters. Once again, nothing that is never ever seen before or spectacular. Just one thing or two things I might want to point out. One is that we are very serious about post-signature checks. So what we really want to make sure is that the zone we are transferring to our locations is really correct and valid. And another hint that might be interesting for you and those of you who probably not have deployed DNSSEC so far, what we did do is we used 33 hash iterations to calculate the NTEC3 hashes, which was done kind of unintendedly. So there doesn't seem to be any best practice, and we just want to try out 33 or 32 because we thought we would have to make really sure that no one's going to be able to walk our zone. And we ended up with, as compared to the testbed, with a query answering performance that was so low we couldn't deploy it. But as I said before, we weren't aware of the fact, so it really took us a hard time to figure out what was going on because the performance was just so low. So if you're up to deploying DNSSEC, make sure you choose a reasonable number of hash iterations, and we're now operating 16, and we feel quite comfortable with that on both sides, performance as well as security. Next slide, please. This slide is once again full of information. I just want to give you the impression that there is a well-defined, secure procedure being established with the generation of keys, with rollover of keys, so there's a ceremony associated to it. So everything, not only on the operational side, but on the organizational side, is quite secure as well. And we even took care, for sure, about any disaster recovery concerns that may come up. So we're operating two different data centers and all that. Next slide. Next and last one I can promise concerning to provider change, or to be more precisely what we would want to call it, operator change. We developed what we think a very smooth handover that is based on the RFC that is referred to on the slide. Although we amended the RFC a little bit in the way that we providing our registrars with a what we call Dropbox, where they can just leave the new CSK so that the old operators capable of obtaining this new CSK, just to make sure that even though there is an operator change, the domain is going to be secured at all times, no matter if there's a change or not. I do have to admit, by the way, this is nothing that comes any close to silver bullet, referring to the problem that still we do have a need that both operators really do need to cooperate. The only thing we do want to make sure with that we kind of encourage with that Dropbox the operators to work together more directly. Some of you might get annoyed that we're doing something differently, then let me assure you that we are not so different in a way that we surely talk to other TLDs to make sure we've got the same procedures, and we're not providing you with a solution that nobody else got. So we're talking to other TLDs and registries, and there even is an IETF internet draft around, so if you want to dive down to get some more information about that, feel free to do so. I think that's about it.
Excellent. Matt Larson.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Next slide, please. So I wanted to give an update on the DNSSEC activities that VeriSign's been involved in the past few months. Here listed are the signs that VeriSign had a hand in signing. Of course, everybody knows the root zone is signed. VeriSign runs the .eduzone under contract with EduCause, and we're the back-end technical provider. That was signed shortly after the root last year. And then .NET in early December, and then, of course, the big one that a lot of people were waiting for was .com on March 31st. So I think this is pretty exciting because when you look at the number of domains registered worldwide, for example, VeriSign does this survey and the domain name industry brief that we publish quarterly. If you take into account all the large zones that are now signed, .de, co.uk, .net, .com, well over half of the total worldwide domain names can now be reached with the chain of trust starting at the root. So I think that's fantastic for potential for DNSSEC deployment. Next slide, please. I wanted to give just a few details about the actual deployment we performed for .com. Since we started, the team that consisted of ICANN and VeriSign that signed the root, since we developed this unvalidatable zone technique, it's kind of becoming a best practice, which is gratifying to see, and we definitely wanted to do that for all the big zones that we deployed DNSSEC in, and .com was no exception. So we had the zone blinded, if you will, with the keys obscured for about a month. So this means that for that month, starting on February 28th, anybody who had the DOBIT set still exercised a path where they were getting large responses. So if they had any issues, they wouldn't hear our large responses. And, of course, if they had any issues with middle boxes that didn't like DNSSEC metadata, like, DS records appearing in responses or things like that, I should say NSEC, because there wouldn't have been that many DS records. The idea was to ferret all that stuff out. There was a brief window where we unblinded the zone because we had to have everything out of people's caches. by the time the DS record went in. So on March 31st, the actual deployment consisted of publishing the DS record in the root. The good news is everything was just silent, both in terms of people contacting us and what we saw on various forums. Nobody said anything that there were any problems, so that was very gratifying as well. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we saw then in terms of traffic afterward. So about 62% of queries to .com have the DOBIT set. This hasn't changed a lot over time, at least not recently. And interestingly enough, I don't have this on the slide, but .net is at about 50%. And that's a discrepancy that I think merits further investigation, and we haven't looked into why. But if you take into account what that means, 62% of queries having the DOBIT set, what that means for bandwidth is that if you consider just those 62% of queries, those queries, it takes almost four times as much, 3¾ times much bandwidth to supply the DNSSEC metadata. Because we are using NSSEC 3, that means more records, more NSSEC 3 records than there would be with NSSEC. And in particular, negative responses get larger, substantially larger with NSSEC 3. When you factor in the non-DOBIT queries, the 40% that don't need to have any additional information added to them, it rounds out to about a 2x increase. So that's a long way of saying that it's using twice as much bandwidth now for .com responses. We were quite interested to see what would happen with TCP queries, and there was really a negligible increase. When you look at it on a per.com authoritative server basis, so basically per IP, there are 13 IPs for authoritative.com servers, and if we look at on a per IP basis, before the assigned zone was deployed, there were single-digit per second TCP queries. And that went to what I categorize as a very few, hundreds per second. So when you multiply that by 13, we're talking, low numbers of thousands per second, which is not, really not an issue. We also calculated this value that we call possible TCP failovers. We look at the query stream, and we look for an IP that first sends a UDP query and then sends a TCP query, so the same source and querying for the same query tuple. And that's what we classify as this possible TCP failover. And we calculated that as well. And that's a very low number as well, from basically almost none of those to just dozens per second. Next slide, please. And then finally, I just wanted to give some statistics about how DNSSEC is actually being deployed underneath .com. Joe Waldron, my colleague who was up in the morning, mentioned some of these statistics. I think my slide is now slightly out of date. I say 24. He said 26 registrars actually have registered at least one signed delegation in .com and .net as of, my figure is as of June 1st. His is more recent. We have one registrar that has almost 1,000 signed delegations, and then a single enterprise. If you judge by the commonality of strings in the names, it's pretty clear it's one organization has signed a bunch of their zones, over 500. And then there's the count of signed names, almost 1,500 signed.com names, almost 700 in .net, and then Edu thrown in just because it's a number that we track. And note that you can go at any point to scoreboard.verisignlabs.com and get an up-to-date count. That tracks, that's updated about once a day, so it won't be absolutely instantaneous, but it'll certainly be always a reasonably up-to-date number. So, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you all. So we have some time for discussion, questions. Anybody want to plunge in? Aha.
Hi, Donald SADN. I have a question for actually all of the members of the panels. You all accept DS records or DNS key records for your delegations. Suppose that tomorrow we find a killer app for DNSSEC, and suddenly all your domain name holders want to turn on DNSSEC within a month. How many new DS records can you accept with your current infrastructures per hour, per day, per month?
I'll go. We can accept DS records as fast as we can accept regular registrations. And you know, the system's ready to take a DS record for everybody if that's what everybody decided to do. So we could support 100 plus million DS records. I don't know off the top of my head the actual speed number for how fast the shared registration system can go, but there's an Oracle database on the back end, so it's it'd be on the order of tens of thousands per second. That's the order of magnitude.
They are almost the same for .de. This is just a enhancement of our interface or just another order, so it can be processed as quickly as any other order could.
For .mine, essentially we have built it into our web application for the user, so it's up to them to load their keys in. So I don't see there's any limitation for us. Because after we have collected it in our database, it will be generated again for the signing process.
For .th, we still process the request manually. So it will take us some time to process the request. So it made a lot slower than the others.
DS registration and DS deletion is automatically generated to zone file, so it takes about 15 minutes to 30 minutes in JP case.
Next.
Yeah, I filed a comment to the IANA notice of inquiry asking for DNSSEC statistics on adoption globally. This group has produced some of those statistics for their zones. And I'm wondering whether if ICANN or the SAC is considering putting up a place where the zones can report a common set of statistics for the traffic they're getting on their DNS deployments.
Could you say your name, please?
Bob Hutchinson.
So let me make sure I understand. You're interested in the uptake of second level of the registrants within each of the signed zones, how many DS records they have in there?
I guess there's two global statistics that I think people are interested in. One is what percentage of the names in the zones are signed. Okay, that was a good statistic. If all of the TLDs could report that, we could get a good picture of how many, what percentage of things are signed. The other percentage that is of interest, I think, globally is what percentage of the queries are being made against those signed signatures.
Let me just comment on both of those. You started by saying you put in an inquiry or a comment to ICANN. Although I have a role with ICANN, I want to comment from as if I were completely outside. ICANN could, I suppose, undertake such an initiative to try to gather those statistics, but generally it's not tasked with doing that. It doesn't have a formal obligation to do that. So these are the early days with respect to DNSSEC, and just from the general perspective of how technology gets rolled out and so forth. It's the early adopters and the people working in the field that are typically more active and in a better position to do that. So you have the work that we do and the work that Russ Mundy and his team does and various other groups around the country who are keeping statistics and providing platforms for reporting those. I don't think we're quite at the point where forcing a reporting. There isn't any forced reporting actually among the CCTLDs of how many registrations they have, much less. The other thing to say is that, in keeping with the theme that these are very early days, it's pretty easy, relatively, to track the number of top-level domains that are signed. So we know what those numbers are, and that we're in, you know, roughly a quarter of the total top-level domains are signed. The number of registrars that are supporting them, the number of registrations that are signed, are now down in the sub 1% levels. So it's very early days. And the number of queries, again, have sort of two key statistics. One is the number of queries where you're asking for a signed response. And that's, in a way, artificially high because there's a lot of resolvers that just turn on the DO bit even if they're not going to use the answer. And then the more interesting question is how many of the queries are actually being checked, where the validation is being performed. And that's down in the, you know, super small numbers. Fortunately, big enough that we can begin to measure it. Getting forced accuracy out of everybody is premature, I think, in a way. But there's an effort, as you've heard reported in the panels today, to actually begin to measure those things. So I guess the picture I'm trying to paint is that the questions you're asking are actually being addressed. They're being addressed in a mixture of operational and research and so forth, and not yet in terms of organized formal reporting across the industry. That, I think, will emerge gradually, but we're still as much working out what the tools are and what the basis is for measuring things and trying to put things on a comparable basis as we are getting accurate numbers. And I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, that gives an accurate enough picture of where we are.
So. Yeah, thanks, Steve. I guess I appreciate that, and I believe that the purpose of these statistics really are to make people aware of where we are in the implementation and that, you know, CIOs at ISPs and other places can begin to use that rising tide of information.
Good. Yeah. I think that I was going to ask, you know, so where did you want to go with that? What was the purpose? And I think that's exactly right, that we want to raise awareness and provide a picture that people can begin to choose where they want to place themselves in terms of early adopter or late adopter or, what was the comment that the eighth one was added and the answer was because he could. And then there'll be a bunch of people whose reaction will be, do I have to yet? And at some point they'll find themselves in a position, oh, I guess I have to. Good. Thank you.
Russ Mundy, I have a question for about the .de Dropbox. One of the assertions that I've heard lots of times is that the registries do not have any relationship with the name holders, and therefore they really don't want to get in the business of what's often known as the registrar part of things, and they don't have any way to know if they're really talking to the holder of the name. So I'm curious if the .de structure is slightly different than sort of, you know, the open GTLD, multi-registrar, et cetera, so where it's slightly different. But how do you know from this Dropbox perspective that you're getting the key from the legitimate holder of that name that goes into the Dropbox for the transfer?
It's supposed to be a communication between the registrars and not the holders.
Okay. So you know the two registrars involved.
Okay.
And then, okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, Rick Lamb-Ican. I just wonder if I could ask for the indulgence of the chair. I just wanted to give a quick update that the root zone signing deployment at ICANN has gotten the SysTrust audit seal. This is an internationally recognized auditing thing. And if you could type something on there, can you pull up something on the web easily? Just www.iana.org/dnssec. If it works, it'd be great. iana.org/dnssec. This is our regular site. And I just see how well the net works, though. Anyway, the importance is we're one of the first ones to actually have a SysTrust certification. If you could click that.
Where is that?
It's like close to the bottom.
Oh, next to the last.
I mean, the hope here is that others not necessarily will follow something like as formal as this, and this is something, in fact, that I know VeriSign will also be doing as well. But it was something that took us a year, a lot of work. It's a third-party audit by PwC, one of the big four auditing companies. This is a further effort to gain trust in the system, the processes and practices we have, and that's all I need to say, but thank you for letting me point that out.
Very nice. Very, very nice. So I made a couple of questions here. So, Crit, you mentioned planned transition to NSEC 3. Planned to transition to NSEC 3. How complicated will that be? And do you have it laid out in a nice, clear, step-by-step transition plan?
Actually, we did some change in the NSEC 3 about last week. I tried to make some change to some our second level domain to be used in NSEC 3, and once I did that, some of the guy from the RIPE NCC sent us a mail that complained about our zone that cannot, there's some validation error on our zone. So we decided to move to the NSEC 3 for that zone. That is for the second level domain. We can change whatever we would like to change about the DS record in our zone. But for the top level domain, we have to deal with the IANA to send in the DS record to the root. So we have to be precise on about the plan, because the problem we face is we have to double sign our zone with the old zone signing key and the new zone signing key that will double our zone size, and that would take us around 1 week to do that, to change to the new key. So maybe we will do that for the TLD, for the top level main, once it's due to the the key rollover in the next year time.
Thank you. Also, I wanted to ask Matt. So I was trying to absorb your numbers, and you said, if I recall, it was 62% of the queries are DNSSEC, have DNSSEC responses, and they're 3.75 times as long as regular responses, and that yields a 2.0, if I was understood what you're trying to say, overall average. In terms of the thing. And I was having trouble putting those numbers together because the math that I would normally do would be to take 3.75 times 0.62 plus 0.38 times 1, and that comes out to be a lot more than 2, a lot more than 2.0. I mean, not trying to quibble too much, but since you were so precise about all those numbers, I was trying to see if I understood the model.
I think it's making me wish I hadn't so precisely so precisely cut and pasted. You're right. I'm sitting here doing the same math in my head that you did in your head and realizing that doesn't quite add up. It's not that far, I guess, is what I would say. I would have to go back in more detail. I'm reporting the measurements of one of our obsessive operations engineers, and I'd have to go back and look in more detail.
Well, the good news is that gives you an opportunity to give yet another presentation. Thank you. Question.
I have a question. It seems like there has been a lot of difficulty with the tools and organizationally running them, signing your zones, so on and so forth. And I was wondering whether Matt might respond to, you know, is there any help that that we can get besides these conferences, or is there something going on to help people put together more operational excellence around this? It seems like there's going to be a disaster that's going to happen here, okay?
A bunch of these guys can respond more authoritatively, but let me take a contrary view because we're mixing qualitative and quantitative information here. And so where you say it looks like there's a lot of trouble, I could take the same data and say it looks like there's hardly any trouble at all. It's only a question of sort of where you put those marks on the scale. There is a learning curve. There are some, you know, we've been pretty strongly oriented to bringing those incidents to light rather than not, for precisely the purpose of trying to get them out of the way early, to improve the learning curve, to improve the documentation, to improve tools and so forth. And you know, I'm speaking for myself. I'm pretty comfortable about all this. I don't think we're seeing a lot of repetition of the same problems, and I don't think we're seeing, in fact, that many different problems. So, you know, we're still able to count in the single, you know, sort of count each of the incidents one at a time. This is pretty small potatoes, I would say. So it's a question of, you know, whether one's how nervous one is about these things and what the consequences are. We're still in quite early days, my view. So other people want to comment? And tools are being built, and standalone tools are being built, and then component tools are being built and added into products, and this is becoming gradually more automatic.
Yeah, Russ Mundy, I'd like to comment on that. And there is, we've built a lot of tools as part of our work, and it's at a well-hidden website known as dnssec-tools.org. We're hoping people do a search because it does pop up very high, and when you do a search on Google for DNSSEC, and all of our tools are out available. They're BSD Berkeley licensed. They're free, So they are in existence, and they're pointed at both operational things as well as end-user applications. I've got a bunch in my machine that I can show anybody that's interested in looking at them. But one of the things that's a very big factor in this space is that nearly every DNS operation, when you actually get down to look at the name server operation itself, is different from the next one. And so each and every operational entity needs to examine themselves, what they really need. Some of them are highly automated, and especially the ones that are really large and really their business is focused on providing names and name service, highly technical, skilled staff for DNS and automation and so forth. And for DNS sec things, extending that philosophy works marvelously. And I don't know any of the details about what VeriSign or the others here on this panel have done. I'm sure that that's largely a process they followed. But it's sort of at the other end of the scale, the small manual enterprise that, you know, that loaded up their name server 5 years ago and stuffed it in the corner. You know, Peter Loescher was making reference to operations like that. They are going to be having challenges. And there are tools available for this. Also, Microsoft in their latest major release does have some support for DNSSEC. And so shops that are explicitly Microsoft shops are you know, having that available. So, yes, folks need to go look for tools. They won't hear about them probably from their vendors because most vendors aren't really pushing them yet. But there are a good deal of tools, tool help, training help available in the world. And thanks for popping up the website. That's our DNSSEC tools website.
It was the first to come. It was at the top of the search.
Okay, great. That's where we like to be with the Google search.
Good. Thank you all very much. Let me thank the panelists here, Jörg, Jan, Fujiwara, Krit, and Matt. This is continues to be a real pleasure. If any of you have suggestions about how to improve these sessions, we're wide open for improvements. We've evolved these sessions considerably over the few years that we've been doing them, and I think my point of view is that we've gotten better and more contentful as we've gone along, and we'd be delighted to continue that evolution. And if anybody feels even more strongly that they think they can do a better job, boy, I'm happy to either invite you in or turn over the entire process, depending on. Anyway, thank you all coming. And Julie, let me thank you very much. This is one of the best organized sessions we've ever had. And I think it's all gone very smoothly. Thank you.
Thanks. And before you leave, be sure to take a plate of food with you.